right. Apologies to anybody cut off mid-sentence. welcome all. Go around and say hi. We were just talking about green medicines for all the stress of recent times. And I just want to say I have a constant in the background right now. I can hear cedar waxwings. It's a very high tee, tee, tee. It's a whole flock of cedar waxwings outside. Let's say hello to Ellen and Michael, Pat, Shoketsu, Sydney, Jeannie, Bob K, Mark, Paulette, Sam, Susan, Peter, Jim, Vin, Mary, Marv, James, Alex, welcome, Adine, Franklin, Yashe Soki, John, Claudia, Amelia, and Rufan. And it says, Amelia, that you just raised your hand. Did you want to say something? Or are you just saying hi?
No, that was just my bow.
Okay. let's see. Let's see. In terms of announcements, we're starting a new book on Tuesday. There's a one-day retreat in October on a Saturday. In November 1st, we'll have our Sagaki ceremony, which will be very, very different online versus in person, but we're going to make it work. So Sagaki is a ceremony where Sajiki, I think we're supposed to call it now, because in Japan, Sagaki is has some racist overtones. It's a long story. But anyway, so Sajiki is a ceremony we have once a year where it's called the Festival of the Hungry Ghosts. And we remember people who have died in the last year. We also kind of summon unresolved karma for that day and do some ceremonial around it and acknowledge it and then send it on its way. So one of the things that we do is some chanting where we recite the names of people who have died in the last year or have not been remembered at this ceremony before. So if you have someone on your list who, if you've already put them on our merit list, which we chant on Sundays during service, then they will be on the Sajiki list as well. But if it's somebody who haven't put on our list and you want remembered and read aloud during the ceremony, then send that information to me at the info@brightwayzen.org website. I mean, email address. Any other announcements that anybody can think of? Okay. Ha. So it has been a while since I gave a talk singing the praises of Zazen. So that's what I'm going to do today. Zazen as a practice of wholeness. And with everything that's going on in the world right now and also in our personal lives, I have been mentioning with some regularity this idea that we can divide our practice into three parts, or think of our practice as having three ingredients, all of which are essential. But as we cook our life, the proportions of these ingredients might need to change. depending on what is going on for us. So the ingredients are bearing witness, exposing ourselves to the suffering in the world out of compassion, just bearing witness, momentarily setting aside the question of whether we can do anything to help, taking care, engaging in activities, relationships, practices that nourish and sustain us, and then taking action. So because of we have taken the bodhisattva vow, participating in a tangible way to help alleviate or prevent the suffering we witness. So Zazen can be, I think, can be seen as really being part of all three of these things. So it is taking care. That's usually how primarily I think about it. It's taking care of ourselves. It's our spiritual practice. It's something we engage in that is nourishing and sustaining. It's also, to some extent, because of the nature of our practice, it's bearing witness. It is for the time being, just being present with, witnessing, opening up to the suffering that we know is happening in the world or that is happening within ourselves, without in setting aside the question of the agenda about what we can do about it. And Zazen is also, to some extent, it's taking action. Now, when I usually talk about taking action, I'm talking about it's kind of an outwardly focused thing where we are fulfilling our bodhisattva vows in the world. But this, you know, we have to take care of our own suffering as well. And Zazen is an action. It is something that we do. We actually, it's a tangible thing that we do. So I want to talk about, because Zazen is so important, I want to talk about it and explore it. So Zazen compared to meditation. One of my favorite phrases on Zazen is by Dogen, expressed in our chant, Fukan Zazengi, when he says, "The Zazen I speak of is not meditation practice. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease." So I want to keep in mind that language is just an expression of reality. It's our expression. It's like an artistic expression. You see something and you draw it, or you express it in music, or it inspires a poem. I mean, language can never fully convey, capture reality. But as long as we don't expect it to, that's fine. So there are many different ways to describe that activity, that thing that we do when we sit Zazen. So I want to focus today on this aspect of Zazen in which it is a Dharma gate of joyful ease, and how it is that because it is a practice of wholeness. So we set aside some time for our Zazen, and we probably tell other people that we're meditating, because at least these days, most people have some idea about meditation and what that means. And so they go, "Oh, okay, I'm meditating. Sounds good, sounds healthy, sounds useful." And most people, perhaps ourselves included, think that means, right, we're going to spend some time calming or concentrating the mind, doing some kind of healthy practice for a period of time because of the benefits that that brings. And the benefits, at least momentarily, more calm, you know, some distance, independence from our emotions, maybe some perspective, maybe some insight, greater awareness, mindfulness, perhaps an ability to control our minds to some extent so that we're not so caught up in our thinking and worrying or fantasizing or stewing on afflictive emotions. So in that sense, meditation is something that we do, like exercise or therapy or some kind of healthy activity. And yet I would say Zazen is not like this. So that was comparing Zazen to meditation, which I'll go into some more. I would say if it's comparable to anything, Zazen is more like prayer. Setting aside time where we take a humble, open attitude, where we listen, orient ourselves towards something greater, something that transcends or runs deeper than our ordinary daily self-centered concerns and activities. We make space, set aside our ordinary activities and entertainments. And of course, Zazen is unlike prayer in that we are not conceiving of some being or force who will receive our devotions. We're not imagining some supernatural being or force that is asking us to sit Zazen or expecting us to sit Zazen or happy that you're sitting Zazen or going to give you a reward for sitting Zazen. But if we stop short of conceiving of some supernatural being or force in relationship to our Zazen, the attitude is actually fairly similar. You tap into a sense that the universe as a whole does in some subtle way respond to and benefit from our sitting, harmonizes with our effort. So there's a positive response to our act of making this space, to listening, to bearing witness, to being present. And like prayer, Zazen is best done with no expectation of reward. Like contemplative prayer. So I recommend making space for Zazen in your life in a way that's similar to how you might make space for prayer in your life if you are a theist or as if you did believe in God. This means dedicating yourself to Zazen because it aligns you with a deeper reality. And we do it without an expectation of particular results or even a particular experience. And this is what is challenging to most people about Zazen. Its emphasis on spaciousness, stillness, letting go. We want to know, what are we supposed to do in Zazen? I'd say that's the wrong question. We aren't supposed to be doing anything in the ordinary sense of the word. You might say Zazen is something we allow instead of something we do. And yet, even with prayer, there's a difference between prayer done wholeheartedly and prayer done lackadaisically, you know, with resistance and a distracted mind. So Zazen rarely will become a Dharma gate of joyful ease unless we know for ourselves how to enter that Dharma gate. So I just did a little disclaimer. We're going to talk about entering that Dharma gate of joyful ease and how to do that. But there's still a value in Zazen, even when it doesn't feel like a Dharma gate of joyful ease. I guess if you think of it similarly in terms of kind of comparing it with prayer, right? It would be very natural to be engaging in prayer and think, hey, I haven't been getting any kind of sense of connection or response out of this. I'm frustrated. I don't really want to pray anymore. I mean, that'd be natural, right? That is certainly something that occurs in people's minds who are theists. But it's understood that you're not just praying in order to get some kind of result. That part of your faith would be to do that anyway, regardless of the results. So you wouldn't stop praying just because it doesn't feel like you want it to. if you're truly devotional. So the trick is to find ways to more fully engage our zazen without engaging in any kind of activity in the ordinary sense of the word, without any kind of effort to control your mind or your experience. So in most forms of meditation, you have an object of concentration. And when your mind wanders, you return to the object. It's a visualization, it's a certain kind of practice, it's your breath, it's some kind of meditative object. And when your mind wanders, you return your mind to it. Very simple. And many people think Zazen is similar. And just our meditative object is the present moment. So when your mind wanders, you just return it to the present moment. But this involves an idea about the present moment. What is the present moment? I think many of us would probably think, okay, well, the present moment is my bare sensations with no thoughts attached. So if I'm aware and I'm aware of the sounds and I'm aware of the position of my body and there's no thoughts interfering, that is the present moment. It's like some kind of elusive sphere of experience that's called the present moment, and everything else is somehow departing from the present moment. Concentrating on the present moment also involves an idea about ourselves. I am now in the present moment. A few seconds ago, I was not in the present moment. Conceiving of the present moment as being thought-free, at least not being caught up in thoughts, then divides our experience into times of like successful meditation where we're in the present moment and failed meditation where we're not in the present moment. This is not the Dharma gate of joyful ease. Joyful ease means embracing everything that happens during Zazen with appreciation. Because all of it is our experience of being alive. Zazen is based on the fact that it is a miracle simply to be alive. And therefore, being whole with our lives just as they are gives us stability, peace of mind, and even joy sometimes. So surely embracing everything that happens during Zazen doesn't mean indulging in the various obsessions and fantasies and distractions that arise in our minds as we sit. I mean, what would be the point of that, right? So it doesn't mean indulging those things, but it also doesn't mean fighting those things. Believing that we need to fight them prevents us from entering that Dharma gate of joyful ease. Believing we need to fight them also sets up and dramatizes the existence of some imagined executive I who is in control of your mind and your meditation experience. This executive I is set against our unruly hearts and minds. The executive I who decided we're going to sit Zazen for a half an hour. And then there's the unruly heart and mind that just will not cooperate. So then there's a little struggle there. Whereas Zazen is about wholeness. Everything we encounter is our life, including our desire to control things and our unruly, self-obsessed hearts and minds. When we embrace it all, much of the inner turmoil driving us toward our obsessions and fantasies and distractions decreases or even fades away. When we awaken from the dream of thought for just a moment, this is not, as we usually think of it, a triumph of the executive eye. Oh, good. We came back, we shook off those distracting thoughts. Now we are back in the present moment. Yes. The executive eye had nothing to do with it. Centuries of Buddhism and modern research are both agreeing there really is no such thing as this executive eye within us. We have moments of choice, we have influence, but there's no one super ego in charge. Our conscious self, in fact, is one of my favorite recent scientific discoveries, is more of a narrative we construct to explain what's happening to ourselves and others. Well, and I sat and meditated, but then my mind is wandering. This is an explanation of what happened, not so much a description of the great exploits of our executive eye. That does not mean we are without free will. We still have the ability to decide how we want our lives to go, but all we have is moments of choice. So when we awaken from that dream of thought, it's a precious, precious moment. And what are we going to do with it? We're not directly responsible for or in control of having awakened from the dream of thought. There it is. All right. I awakened from the dream of thought. Cool. What do we do? What do we do with that precious moment? And actually, depending on what we do, we can make those moments happen more often. So we have influence over how much time we spend, you know, caught up in especially dysfunctional, disturbing thoughts. But it's not a direct control. It's an influence. It's a guidance that we do over time. So practicing wholeness in Zazen, we simply include whatever just happened in our experience, in our Zazen. I like to think of embracing it. Again, these are words, and you know, if that word doesn't work for you, think of some other word. But to embrace or include it. Whatever just happened, getting caught up in worry, reviewing the plot of last night's TV show, one of my favorites, drowsiness, fantasy, is just a part of what is. Absolutely nothing that happens during Zazen is excluded. Even our preferences about meditation, our hope for calm, our confusion, our resentments. So what we return to when our minds wander in Zazen is not some idea of the present moment. We return to our intention. That is something that we can safely, in a sense, if you want to return to something, just return to your intention to spend the time, to spend this half an hour, whatever, sitting Zazen, creating space, listening, opening up to the reality of our lives. So there's subtle practices we can do to encourage ourselves to be more wholehearted in this. Practices we need to use very, very gently so they don't become more doing, right? Sometimes you'll end up finding a little practice that you can do that helps you settle, and then it'll be like, oh, great. I managed to settle, and now you've got that as a little thing that you can use to try to control what happens in your meditation, and then it stops working, right? It can be very helpful to just set your intention at the beginning of your meditation, because our minds are just off on all kinds of stuff, and sometimes if we don't even actually form the intention to let go of our usual activities, the momentum will continue. So at the very beginning, we can just say, for the next half an hour or 20 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever it is, I kind of like to say, you know, you can say I vow to or something like that. But for me, it works really well to say I want to. Because then there's no like executive eye getting a control in there. I want to For me, I say, I want to set aside all activity in order to align with what is most important. I have enough experience with meditation that I know that it's that at certain times I can have a sense that I am kind of waking up from a dream, getting more of a perspective, getting more of a sense of what's really important in life. So that's what I, that's where I turn my aspiration. I want to set aside all my activities, not because my activities are bad, but just because I want to dedicate this time to creating this space. And then when I awaken from the dream of thought, in which I'm planning a project or doing something like that, I just touch base with that sincere intention. I've also heard other people, you know, just having a phrase or a word that you repeat to yourself that just helps you connect with that intention. I've heard wholehearted, just wholehearted. And then there's almost like a physical reaction in you that reminds you, or just, or be here now, not in that sense of like conceiving of the present moment, but in that you want to be present for each moment of your life. You don't want to be caught up in the dream of thought and miss what's really going on. So whatever helps align our mental and emotional posture with our physical posture. So sometimes even just checking in with the physical posture can do this same thing. However, we should not use these practices as corrections. So when we notice, okay, our mind has been wandering, we've been dull and dozy or something like that. If we start to use these as, oh, okay, I want to sit meditation, or I, or wholehearted, or if we use it as a correction, that arouses the wrong thing. Instead, it should be like really, really reconnecting with what we really want to do. So even after 25 years of sitting, I'll find myself sitting there thinking, this Zazen session isn't very good. And why will I be thinking that? You know, I'm caught up in planning, worrying, describing things, writing blog posts in my head, daydreaming about TV shows, falling asleep. So my first period of meditation today was just like this. And it's like, I can't fight that. I mean, fighting it doesn't help. If I could fight it and make it go away, I would. And so then it's like, what is the attitude toward that? I mean, in part, you could say, if I embrace that drowsiness, then I'll just get more drowsy and waste my time. But I don't know that it makes the drowsiness worse. Instead, this kind of including, right? I include the drowsiness. This is the reality of my life right now. I'm sleeping in Zazen. And then there is just... There's a certain kind of peace and wholeness that can happen, even if it's just very briefly, of just this too. And there's a kind of settledness and spaciousness, and, you know, many different words that could be used to describe it, that holds that experience, that holds that sleepiness. And it's somehow, there's some joyful ease around it. And if I'm busy with projects or worries or concerns, there's a sense of just embracing that with compassion, as if it's somebody else's mind, you know, just like, oh, wow, you're really excited about that project, aren't you? Wow, you really, really do want to try to stay really, really busy and try to solve all the world's problems. Oh. So even if there's only a couple moments of this kind of embrace, inclusion, wholeness during Zazen, they're deeply restorative. So, to be honest, I mean, Zazen can be very, very challenging for precisely these reasons, because when what we encounter in Zazen is pain or distress, confusion, anger, anxiety, that's not, don't particularly want to embrace that. it is challenging. It's counter to our human self-interest to embrace those things. Sometimes when we're in Zazen, we're brought face to face with ourselves. And I think most of us feel no small amount of negative judgment about what we see. Our character, our personality, our practice isn't up to par. So depending on where we are in our lives, that could be anywhere on the spectrum from like thinking we're utterly pathetic and worthy of rejection to just vaguely disappointing. I'm not quite the person that I plan to be yet. Hold on, I'm working on it. I'll get there. Not yet. This isn't who I want to be yet. So in other words, it's difficult to embrace a sense of self that fails to live up to our expectations. Sometimes people will describe their really, really busy minds. Like I just sit and my mind is like all over the place and da da da. And they describe it as kind of an unpleasant experience. It's kind of a painful experience. But I wonder, I mean, sometimes, of course, we are thinking about stuff that is, you know, sad and anxiety producing and stuff like that. But sometimes I think the pain is less about the content of the thoughts and more about just having to witness that you have no control over your own mind, to having to embrace a sense of self that doesn't include what seems like a modicum of control over your own thinking. That is uncomfortable in and of itself. But we don't have to like what we embrace. We don't have to make a positive judgment about it. We do need to recognize that whatever we're encountering is part of our reality. In order to practice wholeness, we have to stop denying or resisting what has come to pass and what is unfolding in this moment. We surrender the conviction that things should not be this way. Now, as I'm fond of reminding people, this embrace says nothing whatsoever about what you do from here on out. This embrace does not say in any way that, okay, now we just accept things and we don't try to change anything or take any action. That's doesn't say anything about the future. But embracing what has brought us to this point. And the wholeness itself is what gives some measure of joyful ease, some measure of sanity, some peace of mind. So another disclaimer is just that when things are really, really tough, Zazen can be a very, very challenging practice and one that I still recommend, but that in order to take care, right, as we have those different areas, in order to take care of yourself, there are other meditative practices that you can do. So when trying to sit Zazen is just like, like fingernails on a chalkboard or like, you know, very anxiety producing or something like that. There are other forms of meditation. There's walking meditation can keep you more in your body. Maybe following the breath for a while is something that calms you. There's nothing wrong with calm. There's a practice of physically copying the sutras that can be done meditatively. So there's many different forms of meditation you can do to take care of yourself when things are very difficult, because sometimes that bearing witness aspect of Zazen can be overwhelming depending on what's going on. But then I still recommend it. So, our Zazen, it's not meditation practice. I would say it's more like contemplative prayer. Making space, setting aside our self-interested activities, listening. And regardless of our experience of Zazen, we need to remember we are sitting upright, still, silent, and simply being. So regardless of our mental and emotional experience, we are doing those things. So there's a value to creating that space of Zazen. I mean, how could we not? Somebody say, well, I'm not simply being. But in a certain sense, like, how could you not be being? You may not like how you're being at the moment. This may not be what you prefer, but this, you can't actually step outside of your experience and be doing something else. So our main challenge is we might not like the reality of our life. So we try to reject, understand, improve, disidentify, distract ourselves. So our practice is to use each of those precious moments of choice that we really have no control over them arising. We try to use those to embrace whatever is happening, to include whatever's happening, to practice wholeness. Over and over and over, without counting the number of moments of choice we had during a given meditation session. Again, think of this attitude of prayer and gratitude. Oh, great. 2 times during my meditation period, I kind of came to my senses and was able to practice this embrace. I've been meditating for 25 years. Shouldn't it be happening more than twice in a meditation period? None of that is helpful. So I'll leave it there and have some questions and comments, and then if we still have some time, go into some breakout rooms and I'll send you some questions about your Zazen to share. But let's open it up, comments and questions. Just go ahead and unmute yourself if you have something you want to say or ask.
I have a question about, I guess it's more classic Buddhist approach to meditation. And it's the whole idea of right concentration and right insight. And I guess I've never really understood how Shikantaza fits within those two things. I mean, I sort of see how concentration and Zazen fit, but the insight part, I'm not sure. I mean, can you talk to that at all? Or is that just completely irrelevant in the Zen tradition?
I would say that Zazen and the traditional forms of Buddhist meditation involving concentration and insight are like 2 paths up the same mountain. So they are very different approaches, but they get you to the same place. Not that Zazen gets you to concentration in the sense that tradition talks about, but in a deeper sense, like, what is our ultimate goal? So my experience, it's tricky because in the West, we usually encounter teachings on Shikantaza, which was what I'm talking about, right along with other forms of meditation. So we're hearing on the one hand, we're supposed to concentrate, and then we're hearing on the other hand, let go, and then we're, you know. And so we kind of get these conflicting messages. So I would say that I spent many, many, many years kind of trying to do both or either and kind of failing at both. And then finally, I just got up the confidence to realize, like, look, that whole concentration approach doesn't work for me. It's not what I want to do. So I sat a meditation retreat out at Great Vow that fit into my schedule. And it just happened to be focused on concentration. So the teacher was talking about concentration the whole time and had us doing concentration practices. And I mean, I was already like a teacher, right? So I'm like, I think I can get away with just doing whatever I want to do. So I did not spend one moment during that retreat trying to concentrate. All I did was shikantaza. I just showed up. I didn't try to control my meditative experience. I just tried to be. And I swear, you know, by the end of that retreat, I was so still and quiet and concentrated, but not through force of will. I think of it like like you have a pool of water out under the sun and it just evaporates and it becomes more concentrated because you just have allowed that process to happen. So I found that just so confirming that this was like, this wasn't just about like being too lazy to concentrate. It was another way that got to the same. And then in terms of insight, the way that this path of the mountain still involves insight and requires insight ultimately in your practice. But it's a matter of, I think it is Hungzhur. That's one of the things that we read, says bright clarity appears before you. You just get that still and centered and you just see what's true. It's just there. It's not something that you have to dream up or search for. It just reveals itself. Good question.
I particularly enjoyed your podcast number 79 and 80. I know you may not recall what they were about. It was about mindfulness, you know, the body, feelings, mental qualities in the mind itself. And when I say zazen, I do a mix of gentle breathing and sort of, you know, pass the baton on from the body to the feelings, from the feelings to the mind, and mind to the mental qualities are the four noble truths. So sort of keep them in a good virtuous cycle. And as you said, you know, there are very fleeting moments where I get that kind of, you know, totally being dissolved in the moment, so to speak. So just wanted to share my experience. This is Moin, by the way.
Moin, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Domio. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Peter. I am interested to know if you might speak to the importance of allowing zazen, say for half an hour, versus a half an hour of attending this conference and trying to understand the material, you know, understanding versus allowing.
Yeah, well, I mean, zazen's only one part of our practice, right? It's a very important part, but I conceived of our practices having nine fields, and Zazen is only one of them. So I think of it as kind of like, I mean, to some extent, even though I said it's, you know, we shouldn't think of it as being useful or healthy, or, you know, like approach it in the same way we do with exercise or something like that. But on the other hand, you might almost think of it as more like sleep, in the sense that, like, you don't do sleep, but you need sleep in order to function. You need sleep. So I would say in order to function in our lives and in our practice, we need our Zazen, but that doesn't mean that we're trying to do Zazen all the time. We make space for that particular kind of being. We let go of everything for a while, and then it is time to do something else. And one of the components is study, which, even though we can't capture it in language, if all we did was talk about Zazen and never sat, it wouldn't help us at all. So sometimes people will think, like, because Zen is traditionally a tradition outside of the scriptures, right? Like, it's not dependent on all these concepts and all these ideas and all this analysis. But at the same time, it's always had lots of study and scriptures and literature and all kinds of stuff. So I think of it like this. Our brain is part of us. This is like brain food. It's like the brain gets to think about and incorporate language, and incorporate a language that you can talk to other practitioners, and we can kind of talk about the same similar things and share experiences, and also that it is more about challenging the ideas that we already have than it is about accruing new ideas. So that's what's really, like, really good Buddhist teaching is should loosen up your and free your mind, as opposed to just, okay, now I have this other list of concepts to burden myself with. Time for everything, I guess. Appreciate everyone allowing a little more silence in between comments and questions, just because I think it takes a little longer on Zoom for things to arise.
Hi, thanks for that talk. I appreciate it. And everybody's comments and questions are so great to listen to. I was just thinking about when you were talking about how, you know, our attempt to subdue either pleasant or unpleasant mental distractions, or even characterizing them as emotional or mental distractions, is a way to try to control things. Mm. But it kind of seems like our bodies have already accepted them, regardless of whether because when that content sort of floats away, you know, you're already, you know, feeling sour in your stomach if you're anxious about something, or whatever, fluttery in your chest if you're fantasizing about dinner or whatever. So it kind of seems, I don't know, this may be a weird thing to say, but it kind of seems like trying to subdue our mental, just the mental phenomena that happen, it's also in a way it's not accepting how our bodies are happening too, because... Mm-hmm. A lot of the discomfort perhaps is coming from just our experience, our physical experience of that distraction. So I just wanted to offer that weird little thought.
Yeah. And I think that's where the aspect of physical stillness comes in, where, like, you know, in a way we have this mental embrace or letting go or whatever you want to call it, that we try to allow, but our the physical stillness in sitting is in a way what we're not reacting to or trying to fix our whatever the physical discomfort is as well. So, and I agree, it's a whole body trying to just be with, endure. So, if you were to describe your Zazen to someone who doesn't sit, if they asked you, you do that every day or every other day? Oh, really? So what do you do? Would you describe it at all like I'm describing it? Do you have your own way of describing it? This is frankly much easier to describe other forms of meditation than it is to describe Zazen.
I think I would say that I try to take an opportunity to turn down the noise, the mental noise that I have. I always have some of it. In current times, I have more for various reasons, mostly just what's going on in the world. And I can spend a lot of time chasing my mental tail on that. And this is an opportunity to change that. Earlier, we read a book whose name I forget right now, but it was the person described everyday life in a lot of ways as sort of being on a swing of patterns and like a child's swing. And what you were trying to do was take advantage of the pause between going up and coming down so that you could step out of just your reflexive patterns. And I'm trying to get there. That's how I would describe it.
I like that.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think I am always doing something when I'm doing Zazen. It isn't, I have a intention that I state, and then I often do a breath to bring me back from wherever it was I went. And I have a routine. And I follow the routine and because I'm relying on it to support my Zazen. So I do state an intention when I start, and then I use, and I like it best when I do Zazen in the group. I'm not as good at getting to my bench on my own.
Yeah, for me, I think, and it could have something to do with the fact that I do my Zazen first thing in the morning and last thing at night, and that's in bed. So for me, it's physical. It's like I'm metaphorically, obviously, like headless. And I'm just aware of it's an awareness of my physical being. And which seems to, for me anyway, shut off the brain, or at least the part that's this thinking, I guess. Yeah, that's it for me.
It's hard to explain, but I think I would say there's a place you can think of as being the still center, and you think of it as still and as of the center because you can see everything moving from there, and you can hear all of the noise from that silence. And to meditate for me is to be that place, and then quite often naturally it's like realizing that you've been tapping your foot. Why am I doing that? And then you stop. And so the actual silence of the mind is a byproduct of just seeing what you've been doing. So finding that still silent center is what I would tell someone Zazen is right now.
I like that as a as an image of something that you, it's almost like that physical alignment with it, not a condition that you're creating in your head.
Yeah, there's something to also trying to figure out how to indicate that the still silent center is where you end up by default when you don't follow every grubby thought that wanders through your mind. You sort of naturally center there.
Yeah, I really like what Mark said, because I was trying to think of a way to describe it that didn't sound too intellectual. Because I feel like when my practice is in its best, when I'm really doing shikantaza at the best, yeah, there's that, it's like your mind divorces from something else, like something deeper, something that's still center, I guess. And that center is the center. And then your mind, like, I just feel like my thoughts just kind of become like a creek that rushes by.
And I can kind of watch them and be like, that's interesting. Like, and if I want to, I can kind of like put my foot into that thought and like, kind of feel it out and go deeper. And but I like that also that lack of control, that I'm not trying to do something, because I came from a tradition that was super into control. You know, there were certain mantras you repeated a certain number of times, there were certain breathwork techniques you did for a certain number of minutes, it was so hyper controlled. And for I don't know, at least 6 months or a year, I remember going to my meditation instructor and saying, I have this pain in my chest and it only happens when I meditate and I don't know what's wrong, you know? And I exercise fairly regularly and I'm like, it doesn't happen when I exercise. I go to the doctor and I'm fine. Like, I don't have heart palpitations. I'm not having a respiratory issues, you know, this pain only happens when I meditate. And it was really funny, because after just a couple weeks of trying shikantaza, and trying to like, I mean, I felt I was felt so freed that, like, yes, I don't have to count how many times I'm making this noise anymore. I don't have to count how many times I'm breathing in and out anymore. So I loved it. And all of a sudden I realized, like, my shoulders just, like, dropped and sank, and the pain in my chest went away. And I, like, haven't really experienced it since. And it was like, it was almost like my meditation was so controlled that I was actually working myself up into more of a state of agitation rather than finding any peace or center. And so, yeah, for me, that, I like the way you talk about it. It's like a different way up the mountain. Like that ultimate control way does not work for me. Shikantaza seems to really be my way to that still center as well.
I try not to be, like, too sectarian and judgmental about it. I do think it's the best form of meditation in the world. But you should, right? You should like your way the best. And I guess just to close, what I like about it is not just that it works for me, but what it says about our true natures. It says we can trust ourselves. It says if you just be still with yourself, you have everything you need. Clarity can develop. Things will settle. It's not something that some executive eye or some superior being with a program of change needs to make happen. All right. I will close with our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you for being here.
Have a good day.
Thank you. Thank you. Have a good day, all. Bye-bye.
Bye. Nice to meet you. Colleen, where are you?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
Oh.
Atlanta, Alpharetta.
Cool. Nice to have you join us.
Thank you so much. Tremendously enjoy your podcast. Listen to them. Re-listen to them. Add infinitum. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks. See you later.